Season 3, episode 17.
Right, welcome to the Gradio.
That's Comedy Northern Accents 2 weeks in a row.
How you doing? How you doing, Matthew P. Ravel?
Not bad, Jonathan Edward James Payton.
How you doing, Adrian Elizabeth Bradshaw?
I'm very well, thank you.
You've got a minute.
Yes, now shut up.
What is it?
Peter, Elizabeth.
I don't know, Stuart I. language.
I folder.
Is it real?
Yeah. Stuart iFolder. Like.
Yes, that's right. This week I am sponsored by Novell iFolder.
And Seb Payne is your daddy.
Next week it'll be the iPod and then iSight.
And the iChin.
You're an iLanguage.
I am an iLanguage. I'll get this letter from Apple next.
So what should we talk about on this fantastic show of shows?
Direct action from the Free Software Foundation.
Just some action.
Yeah, just some action.
Should we talk to the glorious Mark Shuttleworth and the glorious Simon Phipps? About Ubuntu and
Glory
Spark.
Yeah.
Match made in heaven.
Don't forget Betty.
I don't think we could ever forget that.
I don't believe we
another
will forget
thrilling
that.
Installments.
This is what being one of the most... It's been one of the most enjoyable recording sessions,
I think. One of the most recording. Yes.
We need another Barney about both wine and Google, because we haven't had one of those since the last episode.
Because Google, you know, we never talk about them.
No, never talk about wine either.
No.
And we're going to give birth to a new song for the community.
Give birth is probably the best way of putting it. We squeeze it out.
In the UK at the moment, everyone's got their World Cup songs. We're going for something a bit more... Lug Radio.
Yeah.
As you can imagine.
And, so... All right, let's go with it then.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, on the show now we've got Mark Shuttleworth and Simon Phipps. Hey, you all right, chaps?
Yeah. Splendid, thank you.
Fantastic. Now, Mark's not feeling very well. We should point that out, so forgive him.
The effects are entirely my doing.
And Simon's on holiday at the moment, so thanks very much for coming on the show. Now, tell us, does one of you, let's say Simon, do you want to tell us what's going on with this Ubuntu Spark announcement?
Oh, that's brilliant. The way that things are working out is that when Dapper Drake gets released to the world next week, it's going to come complete with not just Spark support, but Spark support optimized for the T1000, T2000 systems that Sun has been giving away to open source communities like Debian and have been available on Try and Buy.
Right, cool. So, Mark, can you tell us why we would, if we were buying a Sun server, why we'd want to use Ubuntu over a 20-year-old proven Unix operating system?
Well, there's a whole bunch of places where people are deploying Linux just because Linux is absolutely the right choice for that kind of deployment. For example, very, very large farms of web servers now typically are Linux deployments more than anything else.
Cool.
And the new Niagara servers, from a price-performance point of view, have just really interesting properties. So if you're used to deploying Linux and you want to deploy some of this new Spark kit, then the Ubuntu on Linux option kind of allows you to stay within your operating system preference, but reach out and try some of this interesting new hardware.
Excellent. No, that sounds cool.
No, excellent. Tell me, this is possibly a Simon question, but why would we want to consider Spark?
Why would you want to consider Spark? Well, there's a number of reasons. First of all, Spark runs cooler and runs faster than the equivalently priced bits of semiconductors from any other company that you can run Linux on.
Ah, cool.
Cool indeed.
Comedy genius.
I haven't even had my beer yet. Secondly, they run cool because they are designed to do so. It's not that you're running them on low power or something. So they're still faster than pretty much anything else that you're going to be able to go and buy at the price. Thirdly, Spark systems give a great price-performance ratio at the moment. I've worked for a number of companies that have gone through a near-death experience like Sun has. And when you come out the other side, you discover that the company has done some extremely interesting things. These Spark servers are very interesting in terms of their price, their performance, and the fact that you can pack them really dense in your data center. So you can have full racks of T1000 and T2000 servers rather than having to leave the big empty spaces that you have to if you use traditional architectures.
Well, I mean,
temperature is definitely a concern when you're choosing small one-use servers. It's very, very important. But the other thing that's important about it is supportability. So I'm interested in how easy is it to get a support contract if I'm going to run Spark hardware?
Well, if you're deploying that with Solaris, then of course you have all of Sun's support infrastructure right there for you. But part of the announcement that we made yesterday was that the version of Ubuntu that will run on these boxes is going to be fully supported by Canonical. So we'll be providing 24/7 support for Ubuntu Dapper on the T1000 and T2000 boxes. I wanted to say there's something else that's really interesting for me about the T1000 and T2000, and that is that these are the first boxes to kind of grow up out of the OpenSpark process, which is really open source all the way down to the bare metal.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting. It's the first time, for example...
No, it is, I agree.
Yeah, it's the first time that a hardware company is starting to express the values that have powered the free software community effectively to such success over the last 10 years. It's the first time that a hardware company is doing the same stuff. And it's too early, really, to say exactly what will come of that. But I think the fact that the port happened so quickly is due to the transparency of the information and the chip and so on, and also, of course, due to the enthusiasm and energy of the community, guys like David Miller, other Kernel guys, people in the Ubuntu community who've all pulled together to make this happen.
It's interesting. I was reading about it the other day, and apparently the Spark side of things, the Spark side of Ubuntu, came about really quite quickly, didn't it?
Well, there's a long-standing sort of community side to that, right? There has been an Ubuntu on Spark community around for a long time. And some of our guys internally, Fabio in particular, have been champions of that. And so the port existed and was there, but it was sort of it wasn't official, and it wasn't something that we would agree to support until we started looking at the places where people were deploying Ubuntu on the server, and in our planning for Dapper, we realized that the new Niagara boxes actually gave us a compelling reason to look at the investment that would be required to support Spark officially.
So would you say that this is it? I mean, when I first saw the announcement, the thing that I thought was interesting was that this is a real kind of solidification that Ubuntu is a proper enterprise-grade server operating system. It's been typically considered been considered a desktop. Would you say this is a real commitment to the server side of things now?
Yes, absolutely. We changed a whole bunch of things in this release cycle for Dapper specifically to allow us to meet those higher standards in the data center effectively.
Right.
So we have a team that was focused on a version of the kernel specifically for servers. In fact, there are two server kernels in Dapper. One is a kind of a mid-range and low-end server kernel, and then we have another kernel which is optimized for the very, very high-end for 8-way and 16-way type processes. So that's been very exciting. The developers have really enjoyed working on that, and it's been an opportunity for us to work more closely with the sort of Tier 1 vendors, Sun in particular in this case, but also the other Tier 1 server vendors are starting to put Ubuntu through its paces, put it through their stress testing processes, and give us very, very good feedback on how we can toughen it up.
Okay, I mean, another question. We're already in a situation where Linux is a bit of a niche thing. I mean, this is me speaking as a member of a team who talk about Linux every 2 weeks. But there's already a certain amount of nicheness about it. There's already a certain amount of selling you need to do to make it happen. Is taking Ubuntu and putting it on Spark, which is a niche architecture by comparison with x86, not going to make that much difference, really? From the Spark people's perspective, is it a massive bonus to have Ubuntu on board? And from the Ubuntu people's perspective, is it a massive bonus to have Spark on board?
Oh, Simon, do you want to go first?
Yeah, well, it was really very important for us to get GNU Linux onto the Spark architecture because we have a lot of customers who have fairly uniform data center deployments. Some of those are uniform Solaris deployments, and they want to make sure they can run Solaris on everything, and that's why we put a renewed emphasis on Solaris on x86 and AMD64. But some of those customers have decided that they're going to run GNU Linux everywhere. And so for us, it means that Spark-based systems have a place in the Linux-only data center. and consequently it's a very important step for us to be able to head this way. I'm actually very excited about the fact that we're putting the Ubuntu logo on the commercial page right next to where there's the Red Hat and the SUSE logos. And I'm really very excited that what I see as the big GNU Linux of the next generation is there right at the beginning, supporting Spark, as Spark comes up for its rebirth as well.
And from our perspective, you know, technology is always in a state of flux, and so the winners of yesterday are not necessarily the winners of tomorrow. And in looking at Sun as a company and looking at Spark as an architecture, it seemed to me that you have all of the ingredients of a really interesting 2 or 3 years to come. I think that the company's message on free software and community, for example, has come around dramatically. They're saying all of the right sorts of things, all the things that I would look for in a company that really is going to be a significant player in the space. And the fact that the architecture has been so dramatically opened creates all sorts of opportunities for people to do interesting things. Now, for example, with a completely open architecture, I can imagine that that architecture has a big advantage, a huge advantage in the embedded space. You've got all of these companies out there looking to do interesting embedded things, whether they set-top boxes, whether they cameras, whether they're security devices, whether they're appliances.
That's a good point.
And the ability to actually morph the hardware all the way down to the core processor in the way that you particularly need it, I think that's going to light a fire in that marketplace. And Linux, of course, is a very interesting play in the embedded space as well. So to me, Spark is positioned in a very, very interesting manner at the moment, and so to be part of that is quite exciting.
Mark, you mentioned there, you know, potential unusual uses such as embedded devices. What ways do you think that this could affect Ubuntu's future that nobody may really have thought about yet?
Okay, well, you know, that's difficult to speculate. I would say in terms of the interesting, hard-to-predict possibilities, those all lie around the fact that OpenSpark itself is such a new process, and no one really knows what people will invent with an OpenSpark platform. And to the extent that we're now interested in Spark and supporting Spark and part of that process, that might well carry Ubuntu into unexpected places, whether that's further work on the server side or perhaps into sort of alternative places in the embedded space and elsewhere. I don't know.
Right.
I do know that when free software people start gathering around an open platform, they really innovate. And so it's exciting to be part of that.
And really push it forward.
One of the things people aren't aware of is how widespread Spark chips actually are. They're quite widely used, particularly in digital cameras. And quite a lot of embedded applications. Spark family chips, not just the ones that Sun makes, but because Spark was already an open standard, it was already quite widely deployed as a technology.
Really?
And because it was an open standard, it's actually the same problem that a lot of open source software has got. You know, there's no rigid trademark and branding rules that force you to say on the outside of the box what's inside it. And Spark has always been an open standard, unlike the Intel architectures, which are proprietary. And consequently, you can use Spark chips inside things and never have to tell people you're using them.
That's incredible.
And the embedded market for Spark is actually a whole lot bigger than anyone listening could ever imagine.
Because that seems to be the impression, is that I think for many of our listeners who basically live their lives on Intel or AMD boxes...
And some of the presenters.
And
all of the presenters.
Yeah, some of the presenters, one in specifically... probably don't really think about Spark that much, but we're all amazed that it's used in sort of embedded devices and stuff like that. That's pretty incredible stuff. Now, one quick question. This is for Simon. You tend to hear from Sun a lot about Solaris. How does this Ubuntu move compare with Solaris? I mean, are you a one operating system company or now a two operating system company?
Well, Sun as a company has always been something of an engineering collective, and there's all sorts of technologies around inside the company that really live on their merits. Now, Sun as a company has invested a great deal of money in Unix over the last 25 years, and that investment is all represented in what is now the Open Solaris code base. And we're deeply committed to Open Solaris and to making products like the Solaris operating system out of it.
Yeah.
Because we're deeply committed to that, that doesn't mean that we hate everything else. you know, the one of the things that people don't understand about Sun is we believe that you can win without everybody else having to lose. And we're actually very well disposed towards GNU Linux, not least because when you look at what you're running on GNU Linux, a whole load of that stuff is stuff that Sun is committed to improving and working on anyway. I mean, we're key contributors to GNOME and to X.org to Mozilla Firefox and to a whole load of other software that you're running. So the only bit of GNU Linux that we're really not investing in is the Linux kernel. And consequently, we have a great empathy for the GNU Linux platform. It's just that at the moment, we don't have any product to come out of it. So we're still investing in all the code that you're running every day, but we're not at the moment trying to make money out of it. And that, you know, it's a paradox, really, isn't it? The fact that that's the one bit of the world that we're not trying to make money out of makes people think we don't like it.
Yeah. Talking of filthy lucre, Mark, how does this benefit Canonical and Ubuntu as an organization and as a distribution? I mean, will we see more filtering down into the Ubuntu that we use every day, or do the two not really tie up?
I think there certainly benefits Ubuntu in the sense that part of the process of doing all of this is a strengthening of the processes that build Ubuntu, right? As Ubuntu itself steps up to the data center, everybody who's running Ubuntu, you know, gets something that's a little bit more rigorous, a little bit tighter, a little bit more professional. Mm. And that's good for the Ubuntu community. We do hope, obviously, that large numbers of people will deploy this and will want to get support for it. So that helps to contribute to the sustainability of Ubuntu. This is it's an important step for, you know, the Ubuntu community. Suddenly they're actively involved in producing something that is going to be professionally used in data centers. And so there's a lot of members in the community who are very excited about that.
Yeah, yeah.
We're excited. Cool, okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm still looking forward to when I see Edgy F running on that tiny little screen on the back of my digital camera.
With an open Solaris kernel on a Sparkbox.
That'd be really cool.
Like the open office.
Do that. That'd be excellent. The question I had, diverging away from the Spark architecture thing for a bit, the other thing that the two of you have probably been reasonably involved in recently is the free Java thing. What with Mark being on stage talking about it and so on.
Well, we need to get the terminology exactly right.
This was the point of my question.
It's not free yet, but we can call it substantially more redistributable.
this was exactly the point of my question. I mean, from Sun's perspective, you've got Ubuntu saying, look, now you can get Java in Ubuntu, even though it's not free. So I was curious about whether Sun saw that as quite a coup, getting the distributions on board, and whether distributions, Mark in particular here, feel that they're giving a certain amount of undue prominence to Java, even though it's not yet free.
But let's be clear.
I'm not trying to start a fight here, I have to say.
What you're talking about there is a distro license for Java, and we started work on that the end of last year, because there was an obvious stupid breakage that stopped the Java, the JRE, being shipped even in the non-free area of Debian. And the reasons why that was were just stupid historic reasons that needed fixing.
Right.
And one of the great things about working with the folks from Canonical is they're incredibly friendly, nice people who you can ask, you know, well, how can we fix this screw-up? And they actually tell you in nice terms. So we've been working on that for a while, and my intent was always that we would never talk about this as an open source move. We were simply going to talk about how we finally fixed the screw-up that prevented Java being available easily on top of GNU Linux. And it just so happened that by the time the timescales fell out, it was scheduled for around Java 1 time. And then it just so happened that was also the time when Jonathan Schwartz turned out to be the new CEO of the company. And it just so turned out that Jonathan really, really wanted to tell the world that Java was going to be open source sometime pretty soon.
Uh-huh.
And everyone got the two announcements mixed up with one another. Now, you know, I'm dead pleased that we've finally fixed the bug that stopped people having up-to-date packages and easily available Java on top of GNU Linux. I don't for a second think that it's anything to do with actually freeing Java.
Hmm.
That's the project that's now in hand to get Java free.
Right, okay. Interesting. Thanks for clearing things up.
From our perspective, you know, I wanted to be a Java one to support Sun in that announcement, purely because I thought this was a step towards the real announcement of making Java free software. And I really do believe that there is a strong commitment from Sun. son to working through whatever it'll take to get that done. So Simon's kind of on the hook with me to deliver on that. I've seen, though, I can tell you that I've seen from the very top of the organization, from the top of the software organization, a real, you know, interest in making that happen.
Mm.
And so I wanted to support that process. We will not bake Java into the default Ubuntu install until it's free software, because any user space application in Ubuntu needs to be free software.
Free software.
But what we can do is we can put Ubuntu in the we can put Java in the repositories together with other still non-free software but useful software like Oracle now, like VMware, like DB2. And that just makes it so much more accessible to people who are deploying Ubuntu in a production-type environment.
Yeah.
So it was an important step, even though it wasn't the full step of making Java free.
Mark, just picking up on something you said earlier, very quickly, you mentioned Ubuntu with an Open Solaris kernel running on a digital camera. Are we likely to see an Open Solaris version of Ubuntu, do you think, or is that just a bit of a joke?
You absolutely can. If you go along to NextCenter, you'll see that what they've basically done is port Ubuntu, and of course that means almost the whole of the Debian environment, onto an Open Solaris kernel. I think that's a really, really interesting step. So from our perspective, we're interested in the Ubuntu project about giving communities space to do what they do in an interesting and professional way.
Yeah.
We started with the GNOME desktop, but now we also give space to the KDE community, and that's Kubuntu. And now with Dapper, we're also giving space to the XFCE community, so that's Zubuntu. And it may well happen that there is sufficient momentum and interest around Open Solaris to get Ubuntu onto that environment as well.
I certainly
would see that as constructive and useful. There's some slightly tricky issues that we need to work through, but none of those, particularly around the licensing of system libraries and things.
Yeah.
It's a big, slightly messy gray area, but nothing in there is unsolvable. And I'd be keen to see that community step up and make it happen.
Cool.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both for coming on the show, particularly as one is on holiday and one is on the edge of death. We really appreciate that. And, of course, I'm sure that you're both really quite looking forward to speaking at Lug Radio Live.
Absolutely. You know, I was really delighted to see that Mark was the star of the show. And I'm going to look forward to coming along and trying to listen to him.
Fantastic.
Hang on, are we the star of the show?
We're the star of the show.
I'm looking forward to seeing Simon there and seeing all of you in Wolverhampton.
It's going to be great. So thanks both for coming on the show. And we'll
Before I dash off, if your listeners wanted to have play with a Spark system, you do know that we're actually giving them away on 60-day trial for free at the moment.
Yes, please.
Fantastic.
You can order one up. We deliver it to you. If you don't want to keep it at the end of the 60-day trial, we enclose free shipping to get it back to us as well.
That's a pretty nice thing.
If anyone wants to have a go with one of these Spark systems, if they visit out the try-buy area on the Sun website, they can order one up and give it a try.
I have visions of you, Simon, sat there vigorously refreshing eBay to see if any of these Sparks are on eBay.
I think you're sowing seeds in the mind. Readers, listeners everywhere.
Fantastic. Well, thanks very much, and we'll speak to you guys soon then.
Cheers, guys.
See you guys. Bye.
Bye.
On Lug Radio, we occasionally tackle some quite serious issues.
Yes,
and
yeah.
We're returning to that this week with the latest episode of
Betting.
Hello, mate. I can help.
Yeah. Ah, yes. I've just been admiring your fine selection of sea fish, and I'd like some kippers, please.
Ah, what a fine selection we have got. How many kippers do you want?
I'd like three, please. That's three, as in kippers.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry, mate. I just checked and we appear to be
out. I can't hear you. Can you speak a little louder?
I'm sorry, mate, but we appear to be out of kippers.
No, I still can't hear you. You need to speak louder.
We have no kippers.
Do you not understand me? I cannot understand you.
I can give you some fucking
cockles
and mussels.
You need to speak slower. Speak slower. Enunciate your vowels.
Whistle and flute, mate. Whistle and flute.
Will our mystery guest ever get his freedom fish? Will GPL version 3 ever come out? Tune in later and find out.
A while ago, Google bought a small software company called Picasa, who produce a bit of photo software for your Windows PC.
A bit like Picasso.
Possibly, yeah.
Hence the clever pun name.
He was quite the Win32 API hacker. So anyway, what they did was, after much pressure from the Linux community, they've released a Linux version of Picasa.
No, they haven't.
Bizarrely enough, though, as Aid is hinting towards, what they've done is they've taken Picasa for Windows, taken away some of the functionality, and then made it work with Wine on Linux. And
so they've essentially done nothing.
No, they have taken it and
taken some functionality away.
Whatever they need to do to it to make it work with Wine. And some of which is taking some functionality away. I think they've poked some of the code so that it works better with supported Wine APIs.
And it also requires Mozilla to be installed, so we'll assume that it's using Zool or something like that in some of it.
It might be using it as a browser in the same way that Picasso on Windows probably requires Internet Explorer to be installed for the browser component.
All right, well, maybe if I tried
Sounds
it.
Sounds like hell.
Anyway, here's the question, Aid, and I think I know what you're going to say. Is this the sort of thing we want? Do we want companies to say, right, yeah,
hell yeah,
here's your Linux version.
It's a bastardized version and broken version of Windows. Oh, and you need to have this browser installed.
Yeah, exactly.
What we've done is, that's what I want.
Here's the software. What we've done is given you it, but it's just the Windows version faffed about with a bit. Because the problem we got there is, forget any issues of...
Have you got Windy Pops, Matt? I noticed that you were struggling a little bit while you were speaking.
Hang on, before we go any further, this isn't particularly a Google question, is it? It's sort of a general... people say, here is the Linux version, by giving us the Windows version saying it works with Wine?
Yeah, even if they have to fiddle with it a bit to get it to work with Wine. Is that right? Forgetting any kind of open source or free software issues...
I personally would like it if Wine just curled up and died. I really would.
Really? Is it that? What? Why?
It's just pointless. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Fucking code for the operating system.
On the other hand, I mean, Google obviously didn't have any intention of porting Picasa to use Linux or rewriting a completely different version, a completely different Linux version of Picasa.
So do nothing
with the same user interface. But is it better to say you can at least run this on Linux than to say no, just no Linux support for you at all?
I mean, that's the thing. I think you've got to identify whether them doing an application for Linux, whether it's using Wine or whatever, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, that's obviously a good thing, the fact that they're bringing out an application for Linux. I think most most end users probably couldn't give two shits whether it's using Wine or not.
Most end users wouldn't know how to get all that shit working together.
But why wouldn't they? You do apt-get install Picasa. You can't do that because it's proprietary.
No, but they've got Ubuntu Debs on the Google.
Right. Okay.
But you don't have to configure Wine, do you? You just have to basically download and run it.
So you download the Deb.
And it will
must
install Wine.
Already have Wine.
No, it will install Wine as a dependency.
It's like unlike Yum, it'll install it all
isn't
for
it,
you.
Isn't it like statically linked to it?
Oh, I don't know, to be honest.
I don't know.
But anyway, you'd assume that it works fairly easily.
Yeah, the assumption is that installation, it doesn't say you need to go away and explicitly install Firefox. You need to go away and explicitly install Wine. You assume it installs like a Linux application does, in that it will get the dependencies for you. So you could conceivably do yum install Picasa, or apt-get install Picasa, or double-click an RPM, and it just works. But so there's no complexity to get over. Is it still a bad idea?
The thing is, I'd say it would be nice if we had a native port, and the idea of a native port is different to different people. For me personally, I'd like a GNOME application.
Mm.
For some people, they want a KDE application. For some people, they don't want either of the above, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a bit unfair to grumble at Google for the fact that they've done something, but it's not exactly what we want.
I'd rather have nothing.
Really?
But at the end of the day, you don't have to use
plenty of other applications.
To be honest, I'm going to use F-Spot. I'm not going to use Picasa.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right? But you've got the right to not use it. You're not forced to use it.
They're
taking Linux seriously as a desktop operating system.
No, they're paying lip service to it.
Well, no, because they're completely rewriting and doing a proper native Linux port of Google Earth.
I think it would be unfair to accuse Google of not caring about Linux.
That's true, but it's the whole fucking search engine runs on Linux.
They use Linux internally, and they're based on Linux, and I think they do good. And let's not forget Summer of Code. I mean, they're committed to open source. So
definitely.
But the question is whether we should have applications using Winlib. I mean,
no.
For me personally, if it's a case between having the application and not having it, I'd rather have it and use Wine.
Can it stifle Linux development, though?
Yes,
I don't think so. Yeah, I mean,
that's the reason OpenOffice hasn't got any further than it has, because people can just about make do with
Wine. I think the
OpenOffice
developers would dramatically disagree that it hasn't got particularly far.
I'm not saying it hasn't got particular. Well, I haven't said it doesn't.
The reason that people still use Office is because it's really easy to get ripped off a coffee for your home. Yeah, I would have thought. I mean, honestly, I don't.
Yeah, I mean, the thing here is really not.
Can we include the
whether this individual application is a thing. It's the precedent that it sets.
That
it tells people it's okay to not actually develop Linux native applications. I mean, the idea presumably behind the "we must have Linux native applications" people and AIDS saying we don't want anything is that it means that when people do deliver an application for Linux, you know, you've got a proper Linux application,
rather
than something which depends on Wine. Which all credit to the Wine hackers. He's still a bit unstable and ropey.
But I don't try and shoehorn a fucking outboard motor from a boat into my car and use a boat engine to engine to car engine adapter and think, oh yeah, that's a fucking great idea.
I'd say the main thing that's I was a little disappointed with is the fact that it's not open source. You know, it's a proprietary piece of software.
So this is another question then. I mean, Google appear to be taking Linux at least semi-seriously, more seriously than a lot of other people. So do we then completely reject Picasa? If we're recommending something, say Linux to a nan or something like that, because Picasso isn't GPL,
Indian bread.
I think one important point to make is that, of course, they bought Picasso, and the impression I get is that they haven't invested that much development time into the Windows version, let alone any other version.
So I
can understand why they don't want to invest a huge amount of time and resources into making a native application, because that's going to be very expensive for Google. I get the impression that things like Picasa, I might be wrong here, but I get the impression that things like Picasa are just little sideline things that help them fill out Google Images. You know, it's not a major Google strategy.
It's probably a Flickr. On the one hand,
no, I mean, it's not really, but what Google did do to Picasa, as I understand it, is they made it integrate with other Google stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a lot easier to post photos that you store in Picasa to your blog or weblog.
Yeah, exactly.
For example, now Google Oblog. That's the sort of thing they did. When they bought Picasa, it was just a generic photo management application, and now it's at least partially hooked into some of the Google stuff.
Yeah.
And presumably their argument against open sourcing it is that if you want that integration, you have to go and get Picasa. If they open source it, then you'll be able to do it with FSpot.
Yeah, but they make their APIs available for everything anyway, so I don't see that's really an option.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether the APIs that Picasa uses are available to everybody else.
Good point.
I'll be honest with you, I don't know. I don't know whether...
I doubt if anyone in this room does.
I don't know whether Picasa does anything that Google would consider proprietary. I mean, some of the Google stuff is, if you look at things like the Google toolbar, for example, it does the PageRank thing, how it goes and gets PageRank, and you're not allowed to use that in your own application.
Here's a question. You mentioned OpenOffice earlier on AID. Mm-hmm. This goes out to all of you, not just AID.
Okay.
Do you feel that OpenOffice is a proper application?
Well,
and not a native application.
You mean the fact that it's got Java in it?
The fact that it's not written in, it's not a native Linux application.
In what way?
Why is it not a native application? It kind of is, isn't it? I mean, it's a native application, but it doesn't properly hook into your desktop unless you have all the extended little bits and pieces bolted onto it. It's not from the outset, a native application.
Okay, pick a slightly more emotive example then, because if, OpenOffice isn't a native application by that definition, then neither is Firefox.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I mean, when you say not native,
I'm playing devil's advocate here. Yeah, I'm happy with OpenOffice, but what I'm saying is...
You're using a different definition of native, though, now, aren't you?
No, what I'm saying is that...
He is using different definitions.
So be clear about what you mean,
well,
the
concept of native is something that fits into your desktop.
So you mean it hooks into all the GNOME APIs?
GNOME or KDE, whatever you're using.
Surely native means compiled for your operating system.
Well... Yeah, I mean, I think
it depends on
your view. Native could mean, on one person's view, could mean runs on your operating system.
I don't think anybody's
native could mean compiled, native could mean...
There's not a great deal of difference between saying, here is an application I have built that runs on Linux, it runs on top of this API, that happening to be the Win32 API, and here is another application that I have built which runs on Linux, runs on this API, which happens to be the GTK API.
Yeah.
Right? They're just APIs, and they're both offered by native open source tools on Linux. And they're just two separate APIs. The fact that one of them happens to strongly resemble the Windows API
Resemble. It's reverse engineered.
That's not the point. It's still running on top of a native.
The point is, this software is closed source, so I don't care.
That's
a different issue entirely. If it was open source, but they still hadn't done a native Linux port, instead it just ran on Wine, would you be happier with it?
Imagine Firefox.
Have a guess.
Imagine Firefox was dependent only on Wine, ran on Linux under Wine. Then nobody would take Linux seriously, I reckon, as a desktop operating
system. But I think for users, most users, typical users, as in not us,
don't care.
I say where users care is if they use something like, let's say for the sake of argument, something like, I don't know, Abbey Wood.
How do you think Mr. Stormer would feel about it?
Stormer wouldn't like it because it isn't free.
Let's not bring that up.
But that doesn't make any difference.
What I was going to say is, I think users care about things like when they press the open button and they get a dialog box that they're going to see their little bookmarks down the side. They're going to feel that integration. Yeah. It's going to merge into their desktop. And if the argument is, this isn't a native application, then my view is that if it doesn't fit into your desktop, then it doesn't feel like a native application.
Whether that's using Wine or whether that's using something else.
On the other hand, this is...
An important point. It's not necessarily the Google people's job to make that happen.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're happy with the idea of making it run on Wine at all, right, then...
What applications
do is they say, I'd like to get a file. Give me a file pop up a file dialog and return the thing the user clicks on. Now, if Wine is popping up something that looks like the Windows file dialog rather than a native GTK file dialog, is that something you want to say to the Wine people?
Yeah, I mean, well, this has been discussed, hasn't it, in the past?
It has.
I remember ages ago, I was thinking about this, and I did a little quick survey and discovered, just in the applications I use, like fairly common applications, 6 different file dialogs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and that's the kind of thing we want to get away from. Now, the argument could be, if your application doesn't fit into your desktop, it's therefore not native. A GTK application or pure Qt application doesn't feel the same as a pure KDE or a pure GNOME application.
No, it doesn't, but it is underneath.
But that's the point, is that who cares? No one actually cares. I mean, you might care, I might care, in the sense of a technical sense, but for users, it doesn't really make any difference. Because that Windows application, Picasa, running on Linux, still doesn't have the open file dialog in your desktop, it still doesn't have that kind of integration, to a point. I mean, there is some integration. I know that they have, like, a panel applet and things like that, but...
Exactly, I mean, and they have done so much. They haven't just gone, here is the Windows executable that we released for Windows, which is entirely untouched, and go ahead and
run it. Doesn't work in Wine.
Coincidentally, it works with Wine. They've treated so it works with Wine, they've done things like provided a panel
applet. They've only done that because
packaged it as a deb. Yeah, they have only done it because of the Wine, but they're helping the fact that the Wine people haven't completely implemented the Win32 API
yet. Well, let's now use our... almighty Lug Radio power. You know, we've open sourced various things in the past.
We're going to kill
Glass,
Wine.
Right? No, let's get them to open source Picasa.
Yep, okay.
Google.
Open source Picasa. Hear the word.
We've said it. You'll do it.
I wouldn't mind if you didn't. F spot seems all right.
Shut up, Matt.
Previously on.
Betty. And I'd like some kippers, please.
We have no kippers.
Vowels!
And now, the concluding part of...
Betty!
I cannot understand your funny little accent.
Hang on a second, man.
It's so important that I have my free kippers.
But hang on a second, man.
Vowels! Enunciate them! Vowels! You need to speak clearer!
Hang on a second, man. I have got a kipper down here.
Good!
At WinHEC, or WinHEC,
what's
that? It's a big Windows conference.
Oh, thanks for the details.
At that last week, well, you know, I don't know a lot about Windows.
That was totally unscripted, wasn't it?
By the way, I wasn't there, just in case anyone.
You Windows monkey!
Were you a Windows monkey?
You great big Windows.
Never even heard of WinHEC.
In fact, I did like on the show notes where the little acronym thing where you hover over. Aid Bradshaw, whatever it is, it said Windows Monkey.
Did it? Oops. Also said Jonathan Edward James Bacon.
Yeah, thanks for that. I didn't appreciate that.
Anyway, the point was, at WinHEC, or WinHEC, or whatever it's called, a group called...
Fathers for Justice.
Not Fathers for Justice.
Deficient, but... by design or something.
Deficient dick.
The Free Software Foundation, basically, they're guerrilla wing.
Yeah. They've
the IRA version of
the FSF have got a little protest direct action group. who are protesting the idea of DRM. Yeah, the provisional wing of the Free Software Foundation went and picketed this event. They turned up in
hazmat suits.
In hazmat suits, in chemical biological warfare suits. I don't understand
the relevance of that, by the way. What's the relevance of a hazmat suit to DRM?
First of all, they're bright yellow, and so people look at you. And secondly, the idea was that DRM is hazardous to you.
To be honest, your chin is bright yellow, and people look at it.
Yeah. So it works, there you go.
You get infected by DRM.
Do they not think that you've escaped from Guantanamo and then lock you back up again?
Well, possibly. But the point was that it got in the news. So, you know, and the question is this, is that kind of direct action, is that a good idea? Is that the way that the free software community would like to see their own?
Hand out leaflets and...
Hand out leaflets and things. Did they do a stage invasion?
No, it was outside.
Right, it was just outside.
So pitch invasion!
As long as they do that, I don't mind, but it's when they start actually, you know, trying to put a custard pie in Bill Gates' face, but that's going too far.
Unencumber my DRMs. I'd say that, this is an interesting subject and one that I've been thinking about as well recently.
Fancy that.
I actually like seeing this sort of thing being done by the Free Software Foundation, because finally they're not just sitting there making what I feel to be overarching complaints about the impact that proprietary software has on people's lives. They're making a complaint about something that actually has an effect on people's lives, because DRM might not be a major thing, but, you know, it isn't as easy or free to use as CDs are.
Yeah.
And you're basically getting less for your money. But
it's a lot easier, because it's not a purely moral issue.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier for people, if you say to people, Internet Explorer isn't free, and they go, but it is, I can download it. Right? But if you say, this CD is free because you can't copy it to your iPod, it's a lot easier for people to grasp the issue.
Yeah, Although some bloke was writing on some news websites today saying how this is just like a big moral issue, whereas at least software, you know, is a practical thing. But this isn't just a moral issue, and I like the fact that they're getting out there and they're doing something that'll make people go,
yeah,
oh, what the hell's that? Rather than just being a bunch of bearded blokes going, hey, you know,
And the thing is, people won't care about DRM until it actually affects them. I remember Susan getting me an Iron Maiden album for my birthday, and I never really thought or paid that much interest in DRM, but I couldn't play it.
Yep.
I couldn't play it in Linux. Yep. And I thought that was insanely shit.
Mm.
So then I started caring about it because it directly affected me. I mean, my view of this is that I think it's kind of double-edged sword in some ways. I don't personally like seeing shit like this. I think it's a little bit childish and it's a little bit, I don't know. It brings us back to, I think, when people used to stand outside. I remember going out and handing CDs out to people wearing a Penguin t-shirt when I started with open source, and things have moved on a little bit since then. But the flip side of that is, I think it's important. Because at the end of the day, people aren't listening about DRM, and if dressing up in boiler suits makes people listen about it, then that's what we need to do.
I think the concern that some people have is not that they'll become the sort of people who stand around in the market square in Penguin t-shirts and hand out CDs. It's that they'll become the sort of people who are the Animal Liberation Front.
Mm.
Or
yeah,
people
but
for the ethical treatment of animals and things like that.
And there are
edges of that movement I hesitate to use the word terrorist because it's a dreadful black word these days.
Yeah. They're extremists.
Hasn't terrorist always been a bad word?
Not as bad as it is now.
Okay.
my feeling is that
I'm going to have a child and he wants to be a terrorist when he's older.
But, I understand this. The point.
With DRM, right? So, if we all do nothing, right, and then all the music in the world is DRM'd, if we just don't buy it, right, surely DRM goes away.
Yeah, but who's...
Because there's nothing worse the music companies want is no sales.
Pretty big if, though, isn't it?
Who's just going to stop buying Niles Barkley? I mean, everyone seems to be buying that bloody record at the moment.
Yeah. Well, the point is, you're not buying it anyway. What it does is...
Is
you get to the point where people say, I'd like to move to Linux, but I can't play any of my CDs. And it's a reason not to move.
Or my iTunes
music.
That's the argument. Yes, if DRM... I think the music companies are trying to walk the fine line in between making DRM oppressive enough to do what they want and not making it so oppressive that people stop buying records.
But I think the interesting thing, like I was saying just a second ago, is that I think what you just said, Ak, about how they're going to be likened in some ways to like the Animal Liberation Front, that sort of thing, that's that's a downside to it, I think.
I really don't. I think that's an extreme point, though.
No, hang on. Let me explain myself. I think the thing is that if we can, if what I'd like to see ideally is that when something like DRM comes about, which is a bad thing, and we think it's a bad thing, people can talk about it in an adult fashion,
yes.
In an adult way. Hang on a second. When you need to resort to grand gestures and these kinds of campaigns, essentially it means that you cannot talk about it in an adult way.
Hang on, let me finish.
I'm not saying that they have the inability to talk about it in an adult way. I think that they're,
I understand,
just
what you're,
I think that they're approaching it that way as well.
No, I understand
what you're, no doubt, because people aren't listening.
Yeah.
But it's not even that people aren't listening, it's that the other side have already rejected the let's talk about it in an adult way. Everywhere, every film you watch now, got a big thing at the beginning, you wouldn't steal a car, so why steal a movie?
Yeah.
You are a pirate. It is theft.
But the question,
they've already wheeled out the big guns.
Yeah.
Attempting to criminalize people who say, take a piece of music, put it on their iPod. Right.
I mean, just to be absolutely clear, I've got nothing wrong with people, legally protesting in any way. I just think it's a shame that people have to do that.
Do you know what, though? What I think was, what point I really want to make is that the FSF and whoever else is doing this sort of thing, so long as they're keeping it legal and fair and clean and everything, I think they're finally realizing that they have to use the media, and they have to go to people to get their message out there. Previously, all we've had is to very, very much...
Said the word previously, and we all looked at each other. For no reason.
Previously, might
not have happened yet.
let's caricature the situation slightly. But you've basically got one guy going, with a beard, going, hey, we need free software. Don't you understand free software? And everyone's going, what the fuck are you talking about? I used to use public domain on my Amiga. Nobody really gets it. And now, it looks as though they finally thought, hang on a minute, the whole sort of having an intellectual conversation amongst ourselves hasn't been working for 20 years. Let's get out there and take the message to people.
Yes, the thing I think is important about it. Yeah, I mean, it's just literally that someone somewhere has sat back and thought, commenting on OSNews isn't working. Let's do something different. I mean, I don't even care what it is. I don't care whether they have this...
If it raises the profile and they behave themselves, it's a good thing.
This sort of political action direct, let's go and picket windows conferences, whatever they're doing, they're doing something different.
But I think part of it is...
And that's what I think... That's what I think. I don't care what the different thing
is.
They're doing something visible and public.
But I think the problem with that kind of campaign is that it's ineffective, because I think the people who are making the rules and the laws aren't going to listen to that sort of thing.
It's not designed to affect the people who are making the laws. It's designed to affect the public.
Yeah, so they know about it.
And the public are only going to hear about it if it's on CNN. Yeah. They're not going to hear about it if it's on OSNews.
And it's not massively dissimilar to Fathers for Justice.
Yes.
It's obviously less extreme.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people look at Fathers for Justice and think, bunch of nutters.
Yeah, on the other hand,
cool
Five years ago, you'd never heard of Fathers for Justice,
yes.
And now you have. And the very
but
idea,
now
they called Fathers for Justice, and there are some fathers looking for justice, and you know a tiny bit about their cause, is, as far as they're concerned,
but I disagree
a
with
bit
it.
Of a victory.
But
that's not the point, though. You know about
you
it.
Know
I think
about
it is the
their
point.
Cause. You know there is a cause to argue about.
I mean,
the big problem that Fathers for Justice were trying to get across was that there are fathers who
haven't got any justice.
Who are being unfairly denied access to their kids because mothers tend to win custody in court cases. Right? I mean, whether their cause is just or not, that's their cause as they as I understand it.
Yeah.
And most people didn't even realise that was a problem until groups like this came up, and now people are aware it's a problem. Even if they disagree that it's a problem, they're aware that there are some people out there campaigning for it.
And in their particular case...
And free software is very similar. There are an awful lot of people out there, most people out there, who don't even know idea of free software.
I think the problem is, though, is that... as part of my work, I go to different events that where people seek comment. So, for example, today there was an event in Coventry where Bechter, which is a large educational agency in the UK,
Mike Foskett works for them,
right? Does he?
Yeah.
Bechter were seeking commentary and advice and opinion about open source.
Yeah.
So how they can advise schools and education about open source.
Yeah.
The Free Software Foundation there? No. And I've been to so many events like that. And the free
That's
software...
That's a separate issue,
But
though.
No, but the point is that you were saying earlier on that the Free Software Foundation basically seem to sit back and don't do an awful lot, and you're pleased to see them doing something like this.
Yeah.
Which I agree, and I think the guys in the boiler suits was a good thing. And like I say, the only thing... I just think it's a bit of a shame that people have to resort to that because they're not being listened to, which, you know, is a fanciful view. But I just think it's a shame that the Free Software Foundation aren't at places where they're needed. They're needed places like the Bechter thing.
Yeah.
And there was people from, you know, open source.
Did you invite them?
Eh?
Did you invite them or let
it
them
wasn't
know?
Their position to, was
no,
it?
It's not, I mean, I was, we were invited to join, to go along, and, but the point is that Bechter and various other organisations, I suspect they wouldn't even think to invite the Free Software Foundation.
Or if they did invite them,
no one would go. And
probably
I think
it's massive, and probably never heard
events,
of them.
Events like this today, I'd say, are an example where the Free Software Foundation can have a real effect on people and a real effect on free software. They could have, if they were there today, they could have helped push free software in schools, educate people about it, because that's what they do.
So you could say going to that event in suits would have bumped up their profile, and maybe next time Bechter will have heard of them.
Exactly, and then they become. I think they need to become the Free Software Foundation need to be relevant on the picket line and in suits.
And maybe they need two different faces, though.
Yeah.
Because if you invite the Free Software Foundation to a sober event where you can explain rationally the case, and then you see them on the news the day beforehand all in hazmat suits, so you're not going to think, oh my god, they're a bit nutters.
But even things like Lug Radio Live, we've been saying for ages, if you want to do a talk, let us know.
Yeah.
And we haven't had a single person from the FSF Europe.
Or the AFFS.
We haven't had anybody get in touch with us. And this is I consider Lug Radio Live now a reasonably large event in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
It's increasingly becoming the community event that you go to.
I think it's the best thing that's ever happened.
I think so, yeah. But the fact is that I want to sit, like, if they got in touch with us and said, can we do a talk, we'd probably put them on the main stage.
They could have done a boff, at least.
Rufus Pollock, right? I mean, he's been in touch with us in the past, and we put him on the main stage.
Yeah.
And, you know, but there's none of that happening. And that's the saddest thing about it. They need to kind of engage more with people instead of just citing some mantra that Stallman wrote 10
years
ago.
Exactly. They need to get out of the past and get into the future, sorry, the present, and start doing things
that
go to the right people.
But I think getting out there and elevating your profile is one way of doing that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's one way.
Which it's not necessarily the only way.
Yeah.
But because they're doing something different, I think it's great.
I'd be interested to know what their objectives are as an organisation. We know what their general aim is, but they must have kind of objectives that they want to see achieved. And one of their main objective might be go out to ordinary people, fuck the community and organisations like Bechter. Who knows?
Possibly. I mean, we could do with getting GNU/Richard Stallman on the show for an interview.
Or whoever runs Defective by Design or whatever they're called.
Well, I'd like us to try and get Richard Stallman on the show.
First, there was version 1 of the GNU General Public License, the GPL. After version 1 came version 2, which is in extended use, and now the Free Software Foundation are putting together
version 3!
It's the end of yet another show.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
You're not wrong. We do have some emails.
We have a few emails. Carefully perched on that laptop.
Carefully perched on this particularly heavy ThinkPad.
Because Ack made, you know, a lot of effort to not print out any emails today.
In his defence, he does print them out nearly every single week.
Because he was too busy eating pies. Okay.
Anyway,
let's kick it off.
Dono, I've never printed out the emails at all, ever.
I have?
No, you haven't. Sue's did it once.
No, I've done it. I've done it twice, in fact.
Let's get on with the
emails. A good friend, Kat Goodwin, writes in, fellow Lug member.
Yes.
And she says that she hardly ever listens to the show.
Bitch.
Right, that's not really a fucking good way to start.
That's the end of email. Then. Fine, that shit.
Thanks a lot. Goodbye.
So you are the weakest link.
You are the weakest bint. Goodbye.
I hardly ever listen to the show, but I would like to apply for a free ticket. So it's really not getting there, is
it? Don't listen to the show. Can't get in for free.
A free ticket for David and myself on the basis. So she might swing it at the end here with the fact that she's going to bake
sleep with you
lots of cakes.
Well, first of all, she's speaking, and speakers get in for nothing. Speakers, you get in for nothing. You don't have to buy a ticket.
David, you can bake some cakes.
We like Cat and Dave, and they get in for free. they're speaking, so. Yep.
Excellent. Dave's not speaking. Dave can fucking pay.
Dave can fucking pay. Dave's not speaking.
Dave can fucking pay.
Concession price for Dave.
Intolerant revolt strikes once more.
Dave got his wife to write in, so presumably that counts for a concession.
So, are you finished punching around with the laptop now, Revel?
Well, I've just noticed something, that the little scrolly wheel button on a ThinkPad doesn't work under Ubuntu.
All right.
Anyway, Chris Brown, also known as Snack Lifter.
He is the lifter of snacks.
Says, I listened with huge envy to the Irish chap. I think that's, you'll find that's Rory McCann. Heading out to Adidas Abba. Chris Waddle.
Adidas Abba.
That's what he says.
That's Abba.
That's Addis Ababa.
Has he got three stripes across it?
That's Abu Dhabi. Not because it's something I would love to do, but because 3 years ago, I did the very same thing. The experience was incredible. For 3 months, I was in central Tanzania, setting up a 20-client, that's Tanzania.
Tanzania,
20-client single-server network. Basically,
it took you 3 months.
He learned Kishwali, which I think is probably their martial art, and he created a film about AIDS with the pupils.
Might be their language.
I know. Managed the boys' boarding house. He says it's hard to appreciate the value of children coming out of mud huts to sit down at a computer for the first time, never having seen one before. I can imagine that'd be quite an experience.
Mm.
More for them, though. The school's motto was "Education is liberation." That's
quite a cool motto, isn't
it? That is exactly what education should be. It's about empowerment,
isn't it? It's a shame education in this country doesn't mean the same thing.
No, it means wearing a uniform and getting put on report.
And not learning how to motivate yourself.
So he says, basically, the whole problem was that it was...
Is that what it meant for you,
by the way? Denigration of the entire class of teachers here.
What he said was...
I'm going to go to marry to one students.
Oh, he's a teacher trying really hard and everybody's got his lazy shit then.
He was naive to the ways...
No, I'm joking. Sorry, carry on.
Old Chris Brown was naive to the ways of the fat penguin, he says, when he went over to Africa. He says, Edubuntu would have been the ideal solution, though. But anyway, the XP client / Win2K server solution worked well at the time. He says, but the problem is that even though they couldn't afford internet access, or the problem was that they couldn't afford internet access and they couldn't get it, so they couldn't do any security fixes. So someone brings in a CD-ROM one day and takes the whole network down because it had a virus on it.
Yeah.
But he says, you know, it's important that recognition is given to this effort, and he's waiting to see what happens with OLPC. Now, what's that, guys?
One laptop per child.
Per child!
Oh, right.
Okay. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
It's wicked.
It's a really cool thing. A really cool thing.
We ought to get Nicholas Degraponte on the show, actually.
Yeah.
I'll ring him.
So, okay.
Just grab that by the
screen. I was trying to hand it over to
you. I manhandle laptops like...
That's because you've got a million of them.
I haven't got a million.
Got one for every day of the week.
This is the Wednesday laptop. Okay, so we've had an email from Carl Latimer.
Right, Carl.
He says,
hello, guys.
He says, love the show, especially the That Sucks part of the last show. Me.
I
would like to add Real Player for Linux to the list. It sucks.
Well, it fits then.
There are so many reasons it sucks, but I can't be bothered to go into that.
There's it sucks well. So much.
You suck. I'm emailing to bring your attention to my project called Wine Doors.
Oh yes.
Which you can find by pointing your browser to winedoors.org. Things are just starting out, but it would be great if you could appeal to some Python programmers out there to not waste their life on Wine Doors and instead spending on Jacosha.
I'm sure it actually doesn't say that.
I don't believe it does say that. Although, you know, I'm all in favour of that sentiment.
He says something about working on Windows. We're also in the market for a PHP programmer to make the Wine App DB good enough and extended enough to work with Wine Doors as a wine application repository. Just as a little background to what he's talking about, Wine Doors is a little thing which basically allows you to install Windows applications easier, and it gets around all the quirks that you need to know about wine. We talked about wine earlier in the show.
Yes, we did. Yeah.
It's quite good if you need to run a Windows application, but it's a bit of a hack in many ways to get something running in certain applications.
Yeah, you've got to say, oh, for this application you need to set up Wine in this particular way. And the Wine Doors thing is basically you can do sort of downloadable configuration on an application-by-application basis.
Yeah.
So if someone else has worked out how to make, I don't know, Lotus Notes, whatever, work, then you'll just download their configuration file and run it, and it will set up its own private little wine
install. You're really not selling me on this wine thing.
He says, he says, I mean, if you've decided to use wine, this will make it easier to do
then,
so.
If you have, then screw you!
I think it's a really cool project.
I think it's a really cool
project.
No,
I think the project is a cool project.
And he's doing an awful lot of work on it. He says, once we've made our initial release, want every wine user out there to develop application packs with hacks/kludges/fixes, etc., for the applications to run well on wine, while still excluding the terrible global *=native, built-in override.
Yeah.
You know, I really hate that *=native, built-in override. And don't you?
Yes, I do, actually, because I know what it means.
Really?
I've never used wine.
I haven't used wine enough, to be honest. Kind regards, Carl. So yeah, if you're interested in hacking on something like wine doors, then go there. If not, hack on Jacosha. Jacosha.org. Jacosha.python-hosting.
Dog. It's better to have a website redesign, isn't it?
Eh?
It's better to have a website redesign.
Yeah, the sprocket of beef is redesigning it right now.
The sprocket of beef.
That's got to be explained.
Beef sprocket, yes.
Beef sprocket, yeah. I'm not entirely sure what a beef sprocket is or whether I should be asking what a beef sprocket is.
I don't want to know.
Email here from Andrew Becherer, or Becherer, presumably Becherer.
I used to like his music.
Saying, hey, salad dodgers. By which he's probably talking to Mr. Bacon.
He says, fattest man in the room.
What happens when the mainstream media doesn't understand what you're trying to tell them and the general public doesn't understand why they should care?
You get into hazmat suits.
Yeah, it's exactly what he's saying. Yes, writing in to tell us about protesters wearing bright yellow hazmat suits to swarm the entrance of the city's convention centre. This is Yep.
Oh, cool.
Delivering an unsettling message to the corporation, your product is defective and hazardous to users. Yep. I mean, we have already talked about this.
Yep.
But it's cool that they're trying to get the word out to people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, nice. Dum,
dum, dum, dum, dum.
Okay. Monsieur Bao.
Version 3!
Version 3!
So, did you just feel like, oh, I've never read it now on that?
You got a short one last time.
I did.
You got War and Peace sent to show us to
read that one out.
That's Crime and Punishment.
He just avoided it.
Yeah, totally. You can read it.
Thanks.
I'm going to read the one out that talks about me.
Abe Bradshaw.
I always wondered why the name Abe Bradshaw is punctuated on the main side of Lug Radio.
Oh, I thought it was the main site.
Right, okay. What's the point of this?
And the point of it is that if you move mouse over, you get an amusing comment that I get to change every week.
Yes.
It's using the
acronym tag, so if you hover over my name, you get a
It was On Call Bald for so long, and then for the last one, it was Windows Monkey.
Whatever.
Right, that's enough drumming.
Talking of monkeys, little Geordie Man says, Hi guys, just to add around 10 years and that's me. No, I don't live in a Prague hotel room, but in Geordie Land.
Liar. Liar, liar. I've seen him, he's 6 years old.
After talking to some of the
five-roller
community.
So who's this? This is Seb Payne.
Aye, Seb Payne.
This is Seb Payne.
That's me, Seb Payne.
Why ain't man? I've been at Rufus Boogeyman. He's going to turn up with knife in hand at Lug Radio Live and kill the boy.
I keep expecting him to show up looking like Sid the Sexist from Viz. Back hanging out with me.
After talking to some of the iFolder community, like it would be a good idea. Can, however, I need to talk to pick this up and what I need to do. That is literally what he wrote. I cannot translate that.
Is he a better coder than writer?
I hope so.
I don't know.
So, really. Seb Payne, 10 out of 10 for effort. Once you've, put down Line Yourself Geordie and...
He was in the process of getting Jeff to come quick. Because Buggy is on the roof, man.
We didn't point out that the last email was sent by Harry Hopper, which is quite a good name.
Harry Hopper? All right, while I grab the laptop and by the scruff of its neck.
Harry Hopper was the email that was about Aid, yes?
Yeah, yeah. Good name.
Yeah, well, Aid, thanks a lot, mate.
Yeah. No, Harry Hopper. Aid, not a good name.
It sounds like some kind of detective, doesn't it?
It's better than Stuart Isabel Langridge.
Isabella
Ringen.
Right, okay, let me move down.
Isabella.
Oh, that's it.
No, you have to go up for the one that Aid skipped.
Oh, I've got to go for the mammoth one.
Yeah. See ya.
from Matthew Paul Thomas,
the MPT. Michelle Marsh.
MPT.
He says, in season 3, episode 16, Stuart the ludicrous Ging Langridge.
Ah, I like this guy.
He didn't say that. He just said Stuart.
I'm about to get a shake off MPT for being wrong.
I absolutely love modifying emails when reading them out. He said, Stuart said the Mozilla Foundation will deliberately pimp someone else's product, a separate company's product, Google in this case. You know, it's their default search engine. Equally, Google will push Firefox to their users. And they're completely unconnected companies, and they've not necessarily got anything to do with one another. It's as if he wrote them down in some kind of stalking fashion.
Give me a transcript.
No, this is called the setup. This is where you repeat exactly what I said, so I can't deny it. And then he reaches out and punches me in the face with the fist of wrongness.
In reality...
Yeah, all right. I was wrong and I'm sorry.
In reality, Google employs at least 2 Firefox developers, including its lead developer, Ben Gujigujigujigujia.
What's his middle name?
Gujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigigigujigigujigigujigujigigujigujigujigigujigujigujigujigujigigujigujigigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujigujiguj and the Mozilla Corporation has formal partnerships with Google and Yahoo to provide search services to Firefox users. Stuart went on to say,
if a third-party company builds something, a web browser, for instance, and they didn't have a search engine to point it at, good lord, they would then they wouldn't kind of put the search in, you know? You pretend that their products can't offer, don't exist.
Probably best to listen to last week's episode to find out what
he says. Again, this isn't true. Since 2001, Opera has had a built-in search function which initially defaulted to all the web.
Wow, that'd be good.
Yeah, I've heard of that one. Since 2003, Safari has had a built-in search function.
Have you not, by the way?
Eh?
Have you not heard of
it? No. Might as well go okay, dog okay. pile.
Dog piles.
Yeah, that's another one.
That sounds unpleasant. Safari's had a built-in search function which lets you search Google and nothing else. And as an example that's not a web browser, since 2002, Apple's iPhoto has let you order high-quality photo prints from Kodak. Or Kojak. all of these details, including Mozilla's, undoubtedly involved money. A more reality-based subject for discussion on Log Radio would be how free software should handle complicated features that require integration with commercial services without playing favourites, or whether they should just go ahead and play favourites. For example, how will F-Spot ever let you order prints as easily as iPhoto does? If a US-only photo printing company contributed some code that let you order prints from them, should it be included with mainline F-Spot? I think that's a really important question, because I was talking to Paul about this today, and he says one of the things he likes about Picasa is that you can easily print photos. because they've got like that agreement there.
Already built in, yeah.
And that is, increasingly people want to do that sort of thing. So, thanks very much, MPT. We're all fans of you.
Should we explain who he is to the listeners?
Matthew Paul Thomas is a usability dude. He wrote 50 Reasons Why.
He's that one, is he?
Yeah, why 64 usability flaws in Ubuntu or something like that.
Yeah.
And then got employed by them.
He's done a lot of usability stuff.
So he basically said Ubuntu sucks 64 times and got a job.
It was the other way around.
Nah, he's remarkably talented.
Yeah, he seems like
remarkably talented. So
no, he wrote the stuff first, just
I'm not sure it was the other way around. He was going about his boss's laptop, and it turned out to be the old shuttle man.
So,
I have the utmost respect for MPT, although I have noticed that when he's got a point and he's right, he does tend to hammer it home a bit.
And you never do that.
That's what he's done there. Thank you very much, Matthew. Yes, I was wrong. I'm sorry. I won't do it again.
Yes, you will.
It's interesting. I mean,
good job that's recorded.
I genuinely didn't know that Google had paid Firefox for search engine placement.
No, really?
Yeah,
Christopher Blizzard blogged about it on Planet Nine.
Yeah, that's his name.
That's right, laugh at somebody's name again, Baldshaw.
It's funny.
And he blogged about it and said, like, he didn't say the specifics, but he said, oh, they've got something in the order of something like $70 million, and indicating that was from Google thing. And I think that's when a lot of that kind of kicked off.
I mean, the thing that puzzles me is that if the Mozilla people just thought, you know, we're going to put a thing into search engines to allow you to quickly pass queries to search engines.
Yeah.
Presumably, they'd have picked Google anyway. So the Google people came to them and said, we're going to pay you $75 million to do this. And Firefox went, okay, then, thinking, well, we were going to do it anyway. Yeah. Bonus. On the other hand, does that mean that if you write a browser and you want to have it automatically pass queries to Google, that you're not allowed to?
I think
unless you've got some kind of a deal with Google. Would Google complain about
that? I would
not
thought so. Well, Flock are using Yahoo, aren't they?
Are they?
Really?
Yeah.
I think it basically boils down to the fact that you're just a beard with an idiot attached to it.
Let's move on.
Thank you very much.
So, we've read out the emails. Let's quick reminder about Lug Radio Live, 22nd, 23rd of July. We're going to hopefully be releasing the schedule on Monday, away? The day this show's out.
Cool. Yes. Ooh, by then it'll be 40-odd, wouldn't it?
Eh?
How many days away?
Yeah,
40 days and 40 nights.
It's about 52 at the moment, I think.
You go to lugradio.org/live/2006, there's a counter.
There's a countdown. Check it out.
And you have JavaScript turned on, because I was feeling lazy the day I implemented it.
Did you copy it out of that book, DHTML Utopia?
I didn't copy it out of it. It could have gone in DHTML Utopia.
Yeah, if you want to read a copy of that book, Matt, there's one just holding the door open. Just
yeah, yeah.
I tell you what, I saw it on Emu the other day, so you probably best really? Get it from
on Emu.
Really?
No, I'm joking. Oh.
I thought, wow, that's got to be popularity. If it's popular enough that people want to trade it.
I found the Seraphidian album on a certain BitTorrent site.
You accidentally stumbled onto it.
Busted. Did it perhaps come up in a feed search for Seraphidian?
Yes.
Chin. Nice.
No, I did. I knew that it had been pirated because someone asked me permission. Do you mind if we stick this on a BitTorrent thing? I said, yeah.
You know. Why don't you just give them away on the website for free then?
Well, it's subversive marketing.
It'd be just as subversive if you gave it away on the website for free.
Yeah, but we can't give it away on the website for free right now, because if a label comes to us and says, we want to sign you, then we need to give them something that they can actually press to a CD and sell.
Yeah.
So we can't give it away yet. When we record our next album, it's going to be on the internet.
Cool. Right.
Or you can go and download it from a certain BitTorrent site.
Well, yeah.
So, yeah, 22nd, 23rd of July, it's just shaping up. It gets cooler and cooler and cooler every week. There's more and more people saying they're coming. It's going to be awesome. So.
Yep, come along, come to the big party in the evening. There will be catering now.
Buffets.
Yeah.
And cake, don't forget.
Cake from Cat.
Yeah. Is there anything else we need to make? Oh, in terms of Boffs, Boffs were going to be organised by Aid. Now I'm sorting them out. Aid's doing some other stuff. So if you want to organise a Boff, get in touch with me.
Yeah, and in terms of the exhibition, I'll just quickly say we're pretty much jam-packed, but it would be nice to see someone there from the AFFS.
Chris Wilde.
Or something like that, or the FSF. So anyway, if you would like an exhibition stand, I can probably squeeze another one or two in, but I think that's about it.
Yeah, the only other thing I wanted to say was I want to say thank you to Michael Erskine, MSMTD, who's been doing lots of work deleting spam off wiki.lugradio.org.
Yeah.
In a completely thankless task, and... people keep saying, can you implement some spam stuff? And we keep going, yeah, we'll do it tomorrow.
Aren't we moving it?
We are doing something about it. And the elite team of Lug Radio sysadmin ninjas are going to be taking
they
it
are the
over.
Ninjas.
Let's thank Darren Rimron, William Anderson,
And Mr. Ben.
So and the elite team of Lug Radio ninjas will be taking that kind of thing over. But until then, Michael, you've been doing a great job. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
One thing we've not mentioned.
I don't know if anyone else is doing it. I've only noticed Michael. You might find Tony's doing it. He certainly used to do a lot of that.
One thing we've not mentioned for a while, I know people are going to be listening to this show who've picked up on it for the last couple of weeks or whatever, is we've not mentioned the great community stuff that we've got available.
Oh.
If you want to get involved in the Lug Radio community, first of all, go to the forums, forums.lugradio.org. We've got a great community. There's loads of interesting discussion.
Yep.
The other thing is #lugradio on IRC... .eu.freenode.net.
There's like 90 people in there.
Yeah, there's loads of people in there all the time.
There's always this girl called Fated who will
snog you when you go
flirt with you a lot.
Yeah, so definitely go into the IRC channel. They're a really cool bunch in there, really friendly bunch.
Yeah.
It's a very open community.
It's not your typical IRC channel where you join and they just basically ignore you.
They are remarkably cool people, and we're very, very proud to have them as listeners to the show. And also there's the clan, and there's clan gaming for enemy territory, and they're playing Tremulous now.
New game.
Which a lot of people seem to be quite keen on. We don't do so much of the game. Well, we don't do any of the gaming.
We don't do any of the gaming because we're all completely shit at it.
And we go in the IRC channel sometimes.
I'm hysterically bad at first-person shoots.
And then, of course,
we record on the main night that they play.
Oh, yeah. You do it tonight?
Yeah.
Really? Oh, well, I hope they have a good time.
They do it on Sundays as well, Sundays and Wednesdays.
Yeah.
And the wiki, wiki.lugradio.org.
Yep.
And there's some... There's some really cool stuff and some quite funny stuff on there as well. Is there anything else I've missed out?
Can't think of anything. Planet/Lugradio.
Yeah, that's planet.lugradio.org. And there's loads of feeds on there now.
There are, actually.
All the blogs.
People from... #Lug Radio, the IRC channel, there's us on it.
Yeah.
Things like that. So if you want to stay in touch with everything that's going on, with everyone who's got anything to do with Lug Radio at all, then
yeah,
look there. The only other service is, we ought to say thank you to Aman for doing all the torrents of the show.
Yes.
Every time we put up a show, it's also BitTorrentable, and that's all done by Aman, so big yep. kudos to Aman for that.
Let's not forget the map. Go to map.lugradio.org. There's a map of
all
this.
You go to lugradio.org/map.
Is it?
Yes.
That's a good point, yeah. Lugradio.org/map. Because that's, you know.
Or frapper.com/lugradio.
Yeah. Because there's something like, there's over 1,000 in there now, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's some. It takes ages to load all 1,000 markets.
I also would like to say to everyone that if you want to meet some of this cool community, then probably on the Friday night before Lug Radio Live, we'll be having a bit of a pub meetup.
We certainly will.
In Wolverhampton City Centre.
Pre-Lug Radio meet.
We'll be in the forums.
If you want to see the Lug Radio team with their eyeballs looking the wrong way around due to the amount of beer that's
we
been
are not by, getting as pissed as we did last year on the Friday night.
On the Friday.
I mean, Alan Sweet couldn't even walk on the Saturday morning.
It was, yeah. It was...
It was absolute carnage, and we're not doing it again.
Yeah, so...
But we will be there. I'm just not going to get absolutely paralytic like last year.
But it is... I mean, I know we keep banging on about Lug Radio Live, but it is going to be incredibly cool. And if you're thinking, well, I live in France or Holland or America
or
whatever...
Germans, Americans...
We've got people coming from all over the
Singapore.
World.
Singapore. Yeah. We've got someone coming from Singapore.
The Philippines.
Laszlo's coming from Canada.
Canadian. Really? Canadian?
Yeah, he's travelling over... He's a Jacosha hacker. He's coming over.
Is he Terence or Philip?
I suspect he's maybe Terence. So my bad.
Yeah, he's going to do a Jacosha boff as well, so if you're interested in getting involved in that, go for it, because that'd be really cool.
It is.
Surprised they're letting him out.
I think he's going to object to that.
Ba-dum-tsh.
So, shall we wrap this one up?
Let's go for it.
It's been a fun show.
It's been a good fun show, and we're very tired because it is 12:30 at night.
We're a bit weary because we spent so long on the previous stuff, so...
My toll.
Bye!
Bye.